ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 Okay, 16. We didn't do 16. Okay. Rudranam Rudrasrishtanam.
Rudranam Rudrasrishtanam.
I'm sorry. There's 15 and 16. We'll go back to 15. Ityadishtat Swaguruna.
Ityadishtat.
No, we did that. I'm sorry. Did we read the purport? The next one? Or 16? I can't remember.
Well, yesterday, yesterday was one verse about without any word of commentary.
And then the next one. Yeah, okay. So, okay, we're on 17. Let's try that. Alam Vrajabi Shrishtabir.
Alam Prajabi Srishtabir
Idrishi Bitsuro Tama
Idrishi Bitsuro Tama
Maya Saha Dahanti Bir
Maya Saha Dahanti Bir
Dishas Chakshur Bir Ubanai
Dishas Chakshur Bir Ubanai
Alam Prajabi Srishtad Srishtabir
Alam Prajabi Srishtabir
Idrishi Bitsuro Tama
Idrishi Bitsuro Tama
Maya Saha Dahanti Bir
Maya Saha Dahanti Bir
Dishas Chakshur Bir Ulvanai
Dishas Chakshur Bir Ulvanai
Alam.
Alam.
Unnecessary.
Unnecessary.
Prajabihi.
Prajabihi.
By such living entities.
By such living entities.
Shrishtabihi.
Shrishtabihi.
Generated.
Generated.
Idrishibihi.
Idrishibihi.
Of this type.
Of this type.
Sura Uttama. Tama.
Sura Uttama.
O best among the demigods.
O best among the demigods.
Maya.
Maya.
Me.
Me.
Saha.
Saha.
Along with.
Along with.
Dahanti Bihi.
Dahanti Bihi.
Who are burning.
Who are burning.
Dishaha.
Dishaha.
All sides.
All sides.
Chakshur bihi.
Chakshur bihi.
By the eyes.
By the eyes.
Ubanahi.
Ubanahi.
Fiery flames.
Fiery flames.
Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Brahma told Rudra, O best among the demigods, there is no need for you to generate living entities of this nature. They have begun to devastate everything on all sides with the fiery flames from their eyes, and they have even attacked me. 18. Tapa atishta badram te sarva bhuta sukhavam tapasaiva yata purvam shrashta vishvam idam bhavan. My dear son, you had better situate yourself in penance, which is auspicious for all living entities and which will bring all benediction upon you. By penance only shall you be able to create the universe as it was before. Purport. In the creation, maintenance, and dissolution of the cosmic manifestation, the three deities, Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwara, or Shiva, are respectively in charge. Rudra was advised not to destroy while the period of creation and maintenance was going on, but to situate himself in penance and wait for the time of dissolution, when his services would be called for. So Brahma is desperate to find someone to populate the universe, and therefore, after being refused, his request being refused by his first sons, the Kumara brothers, he next asked Shiva to. And Shiva was obedient, but the offspring he created were undesirable. They were tamasic, destructive living entities. And instead of helping build up the universe, they were starting to tear it down before it even was established. So the Brahma had to reverse his judgment on that. He's a living entity. Living entities can make mistakes, but they, if they're intelligent, they learn from their mistakes and they correct the situation. This is what Brahma's doing. He's suffering frustration in trying to simply do his job to arrange for the organization and the population of the universe. You can imagine how daunting, how difficult a task that is, just to set up a small program, a project, or a corporation in this world. Is very risky, very complex job to do. One has to be very expert to even set up a small program. And what to speak of establish the entire universe. Hardly anybody can even conceive of the scope of the entire universe. The Puranas are describing. This is the greatness of the Puranas. They're not ordinary books. Not books written by people with ordinary intelligence. They're describing a very vast scope of universal history. What's actually going on in the universe? Every Purana, every major Purana is supposed to have five topics. Srishti, Visarga is the name of one. And Manvantara, and Vamshanucharita, that's three. Visarga. Anyway, there's three of them. The first one is Visarga, creation. The Bhagavatam has 10 topics. It's the topmost Purana. But to be a Purana, you need 5 minimum topics. And the first one is always Sarga. The Puranas in general, at least Mahapuranas, the major Puranas, the 18, each describe from different aspects how the universe was put together. It's a very relevant topic for persons who are living in this universe. We want to understand higher reality, but the spiritual world is beyond even the ability for us to conceive of, most of us. So therefore, if we can understand God's involvement in the creation of the world that we do know, that's something we can get a handle on. Something that we can conceive of what's being talked about. So it's an interesting topic, and it's a very philosophical topic. It's a demanding topic. How can you explain the origin of this world? The Puranas do a good job of doing that explanation, because the speakers of the Puranas are great sages who, by virtue of their meditation and their devotional service, they have insight into things that other people cannot even properly speculate about. They have yogic vision, some of them, and others at least are faithful hearers. There are the original rishis who know things that everybody else doesn't know. On the strength of meditation, these are the rishis who have received the Vedic mantras in their meditation. Mantras that have been forgotten in human society, they remember them and speak them to their disciples, and that's how we have these mantras. And so each Vedic mantra, at least in the editions that we have, indicate who the rishi of each mantra is. It gets credit. And the rishis are worshipped. The brahmanas, they perform tarpana every day as part of their required performance of sacrifice. There's Rishi Yajna also. So they honor the Rishis by name in chanting their daily prayers. Some Brahmanas spend more time chanting than others, so sometimes it's a long list, but at least some abbreviated list of the great Rishis, Sapta Rishis at least. Their names are recited when they do Ganga Snana and other times. They chant
names, and they offer water to these rishis out of gratitude. And upon the five Mahayagyas, sacrifices that every grihastha should be performed daily to atone for the unintentional violence committed in the house, from cooking, from sweeping, and so on. The rishis should be worshipped. And we worship the rishis by reading the shastras. The rishis have given us these shastras. The original rishis, the big rishis, are the seers who in their meditation received these scriptures, the eternal Vedas. Other rishis are called Shruta rishis, second string rishis. They get their knowledge not by meditative yogic insight, but by hearing from their gurus, from the Siddha succession. They're also called rishis, but they're called Shruta rishis, rishis by on the strength of hearing. We can put Vyasadeva in that class. He's a young rishi, although he's incarnation of Godhead, and therefore he's often glorified as the best of rishis. Munina apyam vyasa, among munis am vyas, Krishna says. But actually, he's a newcomer. He was born at the end of Dwarpa Yuga. There's many other rishis who are millions of years old, who live more than a manvantara even. So he's a newcomer, and he's not considered that kind of rishi who received the Vedic mantras. He's not among those who get credit for having received the Vedic mantras and others in their meditation. But he received Srimad Bhagavatam in his meditation. Bhagavatam, so he's actually, that level of rishi, the mystic rishi, not just somebody who heard from his guru. Vyasadeva did hear from his father, Parashara, and from other spiritual masters. So he got much of his knowledge just by hearing it. He's not credited for rediscovering all the Vedas, but he's the editor. Vyasa means editor. The difference between rishi and the author, not really the author, but the receiver. But nobody is the author of the Vedas. But there's a difference between the rishi and Vyasa, which just means compiler or editor. He received, by hearing the Vedic corpus, all the different Vedic samhitas and other texts, and he organized them into an effective critical edition, Vyasadeva's edition of the Vedas. There are many, many samhitas, many different branches of each of the four Vedas, and many different parts, many, many subsidiary shastras. But not all of them are manifested in any given time and place. Only a fraction of them are available at any time. On the heavenly planets, there's more. The Puranas on the heavenly planets are not divided into 18. That division was made by Vyasadeva, 18 separate Puranas. Even now, according to the Puranas, that's quoted by Jiva Goswami, there's one amalgamated Purana that's studied on the heavenly planets, and it consists of 1 billion verses. The 18 Puranas, major Puranas we have now, are only 400,000 verses. It's an abridged version, compiled and separated into different books by Vyasadeva. And the task he did in doing that, and also organizing the Vedic texts, the Samhitas, the Brahmanas, Aranyakas, and Upanishads, he established a certain number of shakas, even though there are practically infinite number of different branches. He taught his disciples a finite number of shakas of each of the Vedas. They're not all still available. Some of them are. There's 1,000 branches in the Samaveda, and only about maybe 6 of them are still existing. There are 1,000 that were taught by Vyasadeva, his disciples, branches of the Samaveda. 24 branches of the Yajurveda, but only maybe 12, half of them are still available. So all this organizing, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur in his Bhagavatam commentary gives the analogy of a man hired by a king to organize his treasury. He has jewel collection. He's got all these jewels, but they're all disorganized. It's just a pile of different jewels. So the man comes, trustworthy man, and he sorts them out into separate piles, diamonds in one pile, rubies, emeralds, and sapphires in separate piles. Like that, Vyasadeva took the Vedic mantras, which are all of different quality and different purposes, four different kinds of language used in each of the four Vedas, he separated them out into separate books. Just like someone taking that disorganized collection of jewels and just simply putting the jewels in individual piles. So that the collection could be much more easily accessed. The four Vedas have different languages, actually different dialects. Vedic Sanskrit is not a completely separate language from the Sanskrit we know. It's not that much different. The vocabulary tends to be different. Words have different meanings, and the words in the Vedas that don't exist anymore in classical Sanskrit. And the grammar is more free and complicated. But it's still the same language. It's just a different dialect. And each of the Vedas is written in a separate dialect because the use of the language is different. The Rig Veda is used by the Hota priests to praise the principal demigods who were worshipped in the Jagya, to invite them to come and participate, to take accept their offerings. And so in their invitations, the Hota chants their glories. That's the language suits that purpose of the Rig Veda. It's for glorification of the guests, who, you know, the guests of honor at the sacrifice. The Yajurveda serves a different purpose, and therefore the language is different. It's written in prose. And the language is such that it's suited to expressing what are magical formulas for converting ordinary things into the transcendental paraphernalia of the sacrifice. Oh, he's addressing clay pot. Oh, you are the womb of Aditi. You are the womb of the earth. Where I am making this offering with the hands of Twashta, the arms of Twashta, and forget what else. Yeah. So, just by speaking words, he's changing. He's causing a transformation in material things, making them suitable for using in offering and making offerings and sacrifice. It's magical formulas. We have that kind of use in language in a court of law. The judge, just by his words, is sentencing a man to death. I sentence you to be hanged, you know, until dead. May God have mercy on your soul. Just by him speaking those words, that man is condemned. And just by him speaking, I announced that you're a man and wife. I forget the exact words, wasn't it? I declare you're married. You know, he's formalizing the marriage, creating the fact. Just by his words. That's the same purpose of language as defined in the Yajurveda. And the Samaveda is music to entertain the guests. The same Rig mantras are set to music in the Samaveda, but the language is transformed. The dialect is different. And in the Atharvaveda, there are mantras mostly for rectifying mistakes and for dispelling evil influences. It's often considered the Veda of black magic, but the real purpose of it is not just destroying enemies.
Hare Krishna. Please come.
I want to ask you, Madam, do you know why he is? Because as a Krishna Prabhupada, he's asking, we are going after breakfast to Russian and Mohammed Gandhi.
Do you have room for
only one car for 13 persons?
So I don't know if you have room for me too. I don't know.
Yeah, and we only like 8 persons. So
you have room for 13?
No,
you have extra
car is for 13 persons. 13.
I can come also, I guess. Will it be the whole morning? Will be back in the afternoon?
I will ask him.
Yeah. If it's not, you know, it's not until the evening, I can probably come. Yeah, it's good to go and see the other devotees that protect us from the little kids in Russia. Okay, and the Charvaveda is again a different kind of magic. Some of it white, some of it black, but mostly protect the sacrifice. The Brahma priest, he's in charge of supervising, of catching mistakes, making sure nothing's done wrong. He doesn't speak very much. He has a few mantras he's supposed to chant in this in his song of sacrifice. But mostly he's just listening to what everything that's going on, and making sure nothing's done wrong. Checker. Anyway, so the language is different. It serves different purposes, different dialects. Vyasadeva is compiler, not author, but he's author of a few books, Mahabharata. These are his own contributions, the Mahabharata, the Vedanta Sutra, and then the Bhagavatam. But the Bhagavatam is actually not written by Vyasa. As explained by Jiva Goswami in the Tattva Sandarbha, Bhagavatam is actually Shruti, not Smriti.
So we're planning to come back like 2 o'clock.
Okay.
Lunch.
So I can come here.
Sure. I can come here.
I don't know. Well, maybe after class.
Yeah. I guess we can come through. Is that space? I think that sounds like the funny place.
Yeah.
My foot is like not so good, but I guess it won't be too much longer. Walking up the road. So, anyway, it's a long explanation. I won't get into it now, but Jiva Goswami insists that the Bhagavatam is actually internal. Other Puranas, being Smriti, they're spoken by various sages, and they use their own words. So the words of the Puranas are not eternal. They can change every time they're re-spoken, but not the Bhagavatam, at least. Although the Matsya Purana, it does say that all the Puranas are eternal. That's another idea. But at least Jiva Goswami insists that the Bhagavatam is eternal Shruti. Yatrai Sha Satvati Shruti. This is Sutta Goswami's question. How did this conversation between Pariksit and Shukadeva happen? In which conversation this Satvati Shruti manifested? Which means that the Purana wasn't created by Vyasadeva, but he received it in his meditation. Just like the other great sages received the Vedic mantras. And it's Nigama Kalpa Tunu, Galitam Palam, is the ripened fruit of the Vedic desire tree. It's the culmination of the Vedas. Just like the Upanishads are the culmination of the Vedas in the field of Jnana, in the higher understanding of Bhakti, the Bhagavatam is the culmination of all the Vedic texts, the Vedic desire tree. And Vyasadeva is the Rishi who received it in his meditation. He was ordered by his guru, Narada, to engage in that meditation. In that meditation, he conceived of the Bhagavatam, but actually he didn't create it, it was already existing. He got it in his meditation and then spoke it to Shukadeva. It wasn't written down until many hundreds of years later. Nobody bothered to write it down. Okay, so I'll stop there. Are there any questions or comments?
Yeah. It always seems confusing to understand how the Bhagavatam kind of came about. You're saying that it's like eternal kind of Shruti, but then it seems like also there's some more recent additions here, like Sudeva Goswami and Maharaj Pariksit was 5,000 years ago when Sudha and sages in memory surrounding him. How does that fit? It seems like there's a bit of like Smriti mixed in with the Shruti.
Not really. According to Jiva Goswami, no. Vyasadeva spoke to his son. And what is also what Vyasadeva received in his meditation was the entire 18,000 verses, including conversations that have not yet been spoken. Including the words that Shukadeva is going to speak to Pariksit, and the words that Sutta is going to speak even later to the sages of Namisharanya. Vyasadeva incorporated them all in the text that he received. And then he spoke to Shukadeva. It wasn't an abbreviated version, it was the entire. Shukadeva heard an abbreviated version first, but then he came home and studied the complete text. So he only repeated what he heard from his father. He didn't add or change anything. That's why he's called Parrot. know, the parrot simply repeats what it is, you know, add any language, any words of his own. It's more to it, you know, but it'll take a couple of hours. Anyway, that's Jiva Goswami's explicit opinion. He goes out of his way to say that, that Vyasadeva received and spoke to Shukadeva the entire 18,000 verses. He's a Trikalakya. Therefore, he can easily know what hasn't happened yet. That's the nature of Shruti. In Shruti, in some of the Upanishads, like Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, we find conversations between among historical persons. Janaka Maharaj is having a discussion with the sage Yajnavalkya. But if the Shruti is eternal, how is it recording something that happened at a particular time in history? Same problem. So, you know, it's not just when the Bhagavan is opposing a Shruti you get that problem. The original Shrutis have the same problem. And the explanation is that, one explanation, is that the Shruti is eternal text. It's like a play script. Shakespeare wrote his plays, and the actors are performing those plays 400 years later. They're trying to read the script. Sometimes they're improvising or forgetting the words, but they're trying to follow the script. That's their job. They're putting on a performance of Hamlet. You know, it's supposed to be the original script. So, the historical persons who come at certain times and speak those words, they're just actors reading the script. The script already exists. It's a special thing. It's participating in a special lila when you're, you know, part of the conversation. It's recorded in Shruti. You're just, you should already know the script. You should just read the words. Not the other way around. Not that Shruti is recording historical events. The historical events are enactments, or readings of the script. So that, you know, if you accept that explanation, then it's resolved.
Is it that it's like, you know,
sometimes there's deviation. Sometimes the actors don't read the script exactly right. Yeah. You know, but the script is there.
You know that Sukadeva Goswami spoke 7 days in March, or sometimes like it seems like there's some, you know, other parts of the conversation which were taken in different parts, like Brihad Bhagavatam later.
Well, Brihad Bhagavatamrita is narrating what was spoken after Shukadeva left. So it's not part of the Bhagavatam itself. It's a distillation of the Bhagavatam, you know, recounting of it.
Yeah.
In a few hours, by 1 hour or something, by Triksha to his mother. So it's separate narration.
Oh, but I mean, like, you know, when he discusses the Buddha Kumari, he says, I'm going to tell you a story that I heard from Sukadeva.
How does he say it like that? You know, what his mother asks for is for him to, because there's not much time, rather than repeat what he heard, to condense it. She asked for that, and that's what he gave. I don't think he ever says that these stories were told to me by Shukadeva. He produces those stories in order to, in a brief form, present the essence of what Shukadeva said.
Right, okay.
And then that whole narration between Pariksit and his mother was told later by Jaimini to Janamejaya, and it became the appendix to Jaimini's version of the Mahabharata. And then what Sanatana Goswami claims he's doing is that he's receiving it in his meditation, basically. He's saying, I didn't write this book. This is, you know, I've discovered the ancient appendix to Jaimini's Mahabharata. So I don't think he found a manuscript of it. There's no such manuscript of any part of Jaimini's Mahabharata that anyone has ever found. But in his meditation, he received it just like an ancient rishi. It's like Vyasadeva formed the rishi function, and now Sanatana Goswami is doing the same. We can accept that. Some people may say, "Oh, it's just a literary device; you know, made it up." But why not just accept that he's actually acting as a Vedic rishi? and receiving the lost Shastra in his meditation.
Mm-hmm. But you know, sometimes in the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada's, like Prabhupada will quote, you know, from a different prana, you know, a different aspect of the conversation between Sukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Prabhu.
From a different prana?
Yeah, like, so.
Really?
As far as I remember, yeah. Say, like, you know, he answers this in this prana, Sukadeva speaking to Maharaj Prabhu in another prana.
I don't know if you have any recording of Sukadeva speaking in other Puranas. Sukadeva's there in the Devi Bhagavad, but it's a different Sukadeva. So, okay, Sukadeva appears in a few Puranas, but there's at least two different Sukadevas. The other one has the same name, but he's not the same person. Because he became a Grahastha, it can't be the same person. The one who's described in the Devi Bhagavad. But the same Sukadeva may be described mentioned in some things that he says a few things. But I don't think there's any different narration of the same conversation during friction. Usually, in the other Puranas, we have different persons conversing, like Parashara and Maitreya in the Vishnu Purana, Matsya and Bhumi in the Matsya Purana. I don't think you'll find conversation between Parikshit and Shukadeva in any other Purana. That's why Gautama tells Ambarish, you listen to this Bhagavatam, which is Shukaproktam. By identifying as Shukaproktam, then it's uniquely identified that there isn't any other Purana spoken by Shukadeva. Okay. So I don't know if you can actually find any quotes that Prabhupada gives in Shukaprokta that are actually other conversations between Purushan and Shukadeva and other Puranas. I don't think you have that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
you can show me if you think that there is.
I'll see if I can dig it up. Yeah, I seem to remember that.
There are other people speaking in other Puranas, but I don't think she could have encouraged.
Yeah. I seem to remember Prabhupada saying that Sukadeva answers this question in another Purana. It's like,
really?
There's like a question that Maharaj Prabhupada, I think, it's a bit foggy, but
Sukadeva could have been speaking to someone else on a different occasion. Maybe you can check the folio.
Yeah, check it.
If you don't have access to it, I have it on my machine. Yeah, if you're looking for it, we can give you that. Okay.
Yeah, okay, so, are you bound by time?
Yeah. Are you bound by time? Only, no, go ahead.
Oh, so, I just sometimes wonder about, they use the term smriti for different things, when it's spoken by the sages and it's smriti, and also they use it in a sense of like a manusmriti.
It's more specific. Smriti is, all the Vedic shastras are either smriti or shruti, shruti or smriti. But then the smritis are specifically the dharma smritis. It's only because they are smritis, so they were called dharma smritis, and then they were called smritis for short.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, but they're not the only smritis.
Oh.
But in the field of Dharma Shastra, they talk about smritis, and that's what they mean.
Right. Yeah,
they're just assigning a more specific usage to it.
Right.
See, the original Dharma sutras are connected to the Vedas. There are different sutras, which, they're on the borderline. I guess they're the first smritis, the sutras. They were actually composed by sages. And they further explain the Vedic sacrifices. So they're the Shrauta Sutras, which explain the actual hardcore Vedic sacrifices. Griya Sutras, which perform minor sacrifices that a Brahmin can perform by himself in his house, and are not directly described in the Vedic Samhitas. Those are the Griya Sutras, like samskaras and other simple sacrifices that are performed at home. They're described in the Griya Sutras. And the third category of sutras, written by various sages, are the Dharma Sutras, which extract from the Vedic Samhitas and the Brahmanas the principles of Dharma and present them systematically. Most of those facts are actually presented in the Rig Veda and other Samhitas, but not systematically. So in the Dharma Sutras, the sages organize the information. And it's written in sutra form. All three of these sutras, that format. Later, the Dharma Shastras were rewritten in shloka form by various sages. And they're called Dharma Smritis. original sutras in a more ancient form, and the smritis are written in shlokas. But they're not really the only smritis. Even the original sutras are also smritis in the broad sense, in the original sense. And then, later on, when later pundits wrote condensations and simpler explanations of the Dharma Shastras, like Raghunandana and other sages in the Middle Ages, they were called smritis. And the people who followed them were called smartas, who followed the ritualistic path, according to the Dharma Shastras. That's where the idea of the term smarta comes from. But it's smriti used in the sense specifically of Dharma smriti. Dharma shastra. Yeah. So we have the Manu smriti. Prabhupada calls it Manu samhita, but it's usually known as the Manu smriti.
Yeah.
And there is a Manava Dharma sutra also that exists.
The more Vedic sutra.
Well, yeah. Although scholars speculate that it was actually later. That sutra was written later on. Not all the sutras are necessarily older than, well, not all the Dharma sutras are necessarily older than all the smritis.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
You mentioned that one of the major topics of the Mahapurana should be Vamshan and Charita, discussion of the family tables.
Of kings. Yeah. Especially the dynasty of the Sun God and the Moon God, the kings coming from these two dynasties.
Okay, so the question is, what is the purpose of what is the importance for, for spiritual advancement?
Well, spiritual significance of it is, it's just of interest in understanding the history of the universe. From a mundane point of view, from a spiritual point of view, the major avatars of the Lord appeared in these two dynasties. So these are Hari Vamsha. These Vamshas are actually Hari Vamsha. They're Krishna's family. Lord Ramachandra, Lord Parashuram, other avatars appeared in the Sun dynasty, and Krishna appeared in the Moon dynasty. So in the Bhagavatam, we encounter these descriptions of the avatars, 33 of them altogether in the Bhagavatam were actually described. In the context of the genealogy, when the dynasty reaches that point, when the avatar appears, that's when we see his description. That's why, that explains the sequence of why the avatars explain in a certain order. Or simply explains the order of the genealogy. So, you have the spiritual significance of Vamsha Vachanta. What is it? Oh, Ishakata is what is the name in Sutta Goswami's list. So, Avatara Anucharitam Harish Chasyana Vartina Kata Ishakata Purta. So, the Ishakata, narrations about the Lord, are the stories about the avatars of the Lord and of his followers. So that includes all these kings. Just by virtue of being members of Krishna's family, that they have spiritual significance. That's why there's 3,200 different people mentioned by name in the Bhagavatam, and many of them may not have been pure devotees, but they're members of Krishna's families of these two dynasties. So therefore, it's considered important enough to include the Bhagavatam, at least their names.
So, the Rudra begetted or started progeny, and progeny was not considered very pious, was not very sattvic. So it doesn't depend, upon how great personality.
Sometimes great personalities have bad children. For example, is Dvaitacharya, the three of his sons, and probably gives his own case, not all those children became devotees. And the Lord in terms of devotion service. Later on, was that his youngest son? initiated Jagannath Maharaj and the chanting of the
Yeah. Yeah.
But Dhamma Chandra? For us, he's listening to that. But, there's probably his own examples that his own children can become devotees and great acharyas after his sons became Vaya Bhaktis. That's just the pastime. It helps those great devotees develop a spirit of renunciation with their own children will be.
And get a little more chill.
Well, these rudras, they have their purpose, but their purpose is to destroy, so they have to be kept under control until it's actually time to destroy everything. There's constant annihilation going on also. When a fruit rots, that's Lord Rudra's influence of constant annihilation. But it's small scale. There's a difference between fungus rotting an apple and the whole universe blowing up. So it has to be kept strictly under control. These destructive influences, they're still serving their purpose, but they have to be serving their purpose in a very controlled way, like an atomic reactor needs to be kept under control.
Okay. I think we'll go to Srila Prabhupada.